Yeah, the face, I recognize you. Okay, that's good. And I did notice this morning, very obviously I noticed, that that your pastor's now sporting glasses, so that wise look, this wise look. Yeah. And some of you may have noticed that I'm here without my wife. Okay, Ruthie's not here, and maybe you came hoping that she would be the one you get the chance to see today. But this weekend we are babysitting our granddaughter. Now, remember last time I was here, we kind of went through a lot of that stuff, because we now have a granddaughter instead of just all grandsons. And so she's 10 months, and she is just, whoa, she is fun. And so we're babysitting her this weekend, and I felt a little bad leaving Ruthie when I left. You know, she's going to be with her and have to do kind of everything by herself. She is not hurting. I mean, she is loving this thing. So, I mean, it's kind of, as long as we want to leave Eliette with her, she would be delighted. So that kind of sets that up a little bit, okay? So I don't know if any of you come out of more Catholic traditions or something like that. If so, you're probably familiar with the catechisms that are part of the training. You know, kind of getting, it's a way of helping believers kind of learn some basic pieces of our faith. And the way those things work is they're basically a question-answer type of thing. So they would ask a question and then give you the answer, and you kind of learn both of them. I'm going to learn what the question is, I'll learn what the answer is, and I put these things together, and I've got some way of kind of forming inside me some of those key thoughts about what it is to know Jesus and follow him. One of those is called the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which obviously means there's a longer one, but this Westminster Shorter Catechism. The first question out of the chute, if you were to do this, then, the very first question that's asked is, what is the chief end of man? That's a good question to ask. In other words, what is our primary reason for existence? If you had to try and figure out, okay, what is life about? With all things swirl around, what is life about? That's what the question is. What is the chief end of mankind, of you and me? And the question has this kind of answer to it. What is the chief end of man? The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Now think about that. I mean, let that one kind of settle on you there, because that's the kind of the key to life right here, folks. The primary reason for your existence and mine is to glorify God. In other words, to put him on display, to throw the floodlights on him, to draw attention to him, to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Years ago, a guy by the name of John Piper wrote a book, and he kind of dinked with us a little bit, and he changed a word in it, which I think was a good change. He said, our primary reason for existence is to glorify God by enjoying him forever. Now, hang on to that for a moment, because it has become a significant thing for me. Even though I've known this statement for a long time, this past year, this has played a big role in my own thoughts. And the reason is this. I mean, it goes way back when I first came to know Jesus. That fairly often, I would hear this statement about people. Someone would refer to someone else and say, that person really loves the Lord. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what makes you think so? You know, and I think of this person, I'm thinking, I don't know. And I'd hear that in various times, you know, and every time I'd hear that, I mean, this is going on for years. I'd hear someone, even my wife, say, yeah, so-and-so, yeah, and they're kind of weird, but she really loves the Lord, you know, or whatever. And as soon as that, there's always this little buzz that goes on. And fortunately, I've been able to contain it and not say it out loud. But inside my head, I'm going, really? What makes you think so? I mean, if by that you mean this person is really committed to God, if that's the way you're going to define love, really committed to God, okay, then I can run with you on that. I'll buy that because I agree. This person is committed to God. Or if you mean by saying that someone loves the Lord, that they're obedient to the scriptures and they've cleaned up their life. If that's what you mean, okay, yeah, okay, I'll run. Yeah, this person's done it. But somehow, if that's what we mean by I love the Lord, then it seems to me, unless I'm kind of whacked, but I think you're probably run with me on this, it seems to me there's something big missing in that. It sounds to me kind of sterile. You know, there's no emotion tied to this. Or, I mean, it's just kind of like, I mean, who'd want to be, if you want to marry somebody and be in that relationship? I'm committed to you. I'm going to do what it takes to make this thing work. And that's it. Somehow, when I read the scriptures and it talks about the idea of us loving God, which is the core thing, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. I mean, that's central. I mean, all the ways that the scriptures talk about this. That somehow, I don't think God had in mind simply being good, compliant children. And that's it. That's where this statement drives in there. And it's the second part of it. Not just primary reason to glorify God, which is huge, but this idea of enjoying Him forever. One of the assignments in one of my courses that I have students do is they read biographies on great saints, and they have to give kind of a feedback to the class on what kind of drove this person, what was kind of at the heart of this person's spiritual life and their interactions with God. And they'll talk about some of these great persons, John Calvin or, you know, whoever it is, Martin Luther, all these guys. And after they give their presentation, one of the questions I ask them at the end of that is, do you think this person enjoyed God? And it's funny to watch because they'll have talked all this stuff out and I ask them, do you think they enjoyed God? And you'll see them stop for a moment and go, I don't know. Which kind of plays this idea, it's possible to know a lot, it's possible to have your theology together right, it's possible to be a committed Christian, it's possible to have all these things together, and somehow not have the kind of emotional gas in the engine that is enjoying Him. And I think this is something that God longs for from us. And I believe this whole idea of enjoying God is something that will revolutionize any of our lives. It changes how we go about obedience. It changes how we see life. It changes how we see God. Everything. This one idea. Now, to pursue this, I'd like to take us to a particular spot in the scriptures that speaks to this. Okay, Psalm 37. So find your way there. Psalm 37, paper Bible, kind of make your way there. Bring it up on your phone or whatever you got with you, because I want you to look at this here. Psalm 37, while you're making your way there, let me give you just a little bit of a orientation on this psalm, because it's significant. So this psalm was written by David, and in your head you're probably thinking, well, yeah, that's fine. I mean, he wrote a lot of psalms. Yeah, I know. But this one's written at the end of his life, perhaps one of the last psalms that he wrote. This is written long after he confronts Goliath. This is written after he's had all the great military battles. This is written after the great highs in his life and the deep, profound lows in his life. His successes and his failures. This is after he's walked through all of life and he gets to the end of life and he's basically giving us a summary. Saying, here's what I've learned. Here's taking all this together and let me give you the wisdom of my years of knowing this great Redeemer God. And this psalm, although we can't see it in our English Bibles, this psalm is perhaps the most exquisite poem that David ever wrote. It's an acrostic within an acrostic within an acrostic. Every line has been crafted beautifully and perfectly to articulate these key thoughts of life. Is that a good setup? Psalm 37 starts out this way. At least in my translation. It says, do not fret because of evildoers. Do not be envious toward wrongdoers. Now just stop there for a moment. That's kind of his setup, because the whole psalm is going to talk about this kind of stuff. What do you do with some of these things that we struggle with all the time? What do you do with those who truly are evil people and do evil things? There was another mass killing last night. 50 people shot, dead. Another 50-some that are seriously injured in that whole thing. What do you do with that stuff? What do you do with the things that just seem so wrong? How do you deal with the whole idea that it seems like there are others who cheat and steal and all that stuff, and they get all the good stuff. And you're honest and you work and you trust God and you got little. What do you do with that? What do you do with the idea that so many things that you think you want so badly in this life always seem to be just outside of your reach? Okay, am I asking the right questions? Because I think those are probably something that runs through all of mankind. And David says, let me tell you what I've found. Let me give you insight into how this life works, at least from my experience, he would say. I'm thinking David's got a pretty good read on it. So if you look at where he goes next, he gives four keys. And we're not going to deal with all four of these. I just want one of them. But I want you to see what he says. And just jot these down, if nothing else, because they're kind of what makes it all work. In verse 3, he says, first of all, trust in the Lord. In other words, settle in your mind what is true. Kind of lock it in. So it's not just trust in the Lord like on some vague idea, but lock it in what is true and have that be what's driving your life. First of all, trust in the Lord. Secondly, delight in the Lord. Okay, now set that one aside. We're going to come back. That's the one we want to look at. Then you get down a little bit farther here. Verse 5, he says, commit your ways to the Lord. In other words, take your story and drop it inside God's bigger story because it's only there that's going to make any sense. When it stands alone, it doesn't work. Go down a little bit farther, verse 7, and rest in the Lord. In other words, leave the results to God. Let His story play out the way He wants it to play out. Well, great things there. Notice that in the Lord is the big theme of the whole thing. Everything swirls around us. But the one I want us to look at is verse 4 there. Perhaps you've studied this. Maybe it's marked in your Bible. Maybe you've memorized this thing. Maybe you count on it as a key verse in your life. It says, delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Good statement, isn't it? Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, when we hear that statement, that verse, what part do you think we usually lock on to? Now, maybe not you, but everybody else. What part do you think we lock on to? The second part, right? It's kind of like, oh, here's the golden key I've been looking for. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give me all the things that I want. The desires of my heart. Yes, I found it. All I got to do is figure out the first half. And then I'm good. Now, we chuckle a little bit, but I tested this out with people. And that's kind of where we all go. We kind of, somehow, this is the one I've been looking for. If I delight myself in the Lord, He will give me the desires of the heart. So when you look at this here, there are a couple of words that are being used. Desire and delight. See that in there? Okay. Desire and delight. Now, let me ask you, what do you think is the difference between those two words? This is not a class, so you don't say it out loud. Okay. But I want you to just think for a moment. What's the difference between desire and delight? Because it's a big difference. Have you thought about it now? It's active thinking. Okay, good. The difference is this. Desire has to do with something I don't yet have. It's something future. It's something that I long for, something that I yearn for, but I don't have it yet. Delight has to do with what I do have. It's enjoying and taking pleasure in what I do have. See, there's a dramatic difference on these. I mentioned John Piper. I love the guy and all this stuff. But when he wrote his book, everything had to do with desiring God. And I think he missed the mark when he did that. Because the key is not simply desiring Him, but delighting in Him. Because God has already given Himself to us and all the pleasures of Him. And so the emphasis is on that. And that's where the psalm, that's where David goes with this thing. Delight yourself in the Lord. Now, some observations on this statement. Just kind of, surface stuff just to look at as you're noticing this statement. Look at what it says. Delight yourself in the Lord. First thing I want you to notice is that this is an imperative statement. This is not like a suggestion or an idea. This falls into like that command category. Like it's a priority. This matters, David says. Delight yourself in the Lord! Exclamation point. Delight yourself. It's an imperative. And secondly, what I would want you to notice in this is that this is offered as an alternative to something else. Instead of doing those things in the first verse, getting all worked up on evildoers and the things that are wrong in this world and what you don't have, an alternative is this. Delight yourself in the Lord. When he says this, it's different from the way perhaps we often approach our relationship with God. Instead of approaching God from kind of like an obligatory obedience to Him or an intellectual interest in Him, it somehow reaches far deeper into our actual heart when we do this thing. The Scripture's filled with this. This is not a standalone verse. The Scripture's filled with language that is like this. For example, the Scriptures speak often of rejoicing in the Lord. In other words, of finding joy in Him. Or of extolling the Lord, which is placing great value in Him. Of praising the Lord. How many times do we read that in the Scriptures? Celebrating Him is the idea. Of glorifying God, which is part of that confession as well, which is calling attention to all the wonders of who He is. Blessing the Lord, which is treasuring Him. And ultimately, that key statement in Deuteronomy, that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. The word that's used there is not a word of commitment. It's a word that speaks directly to the idea of the delight of the heart. That's the word used there. Passion in this thing. So let me play with this word a little bit more here. Because it's a very interesting Hebrew word. The word that's used here is a word that, for example, means to savor something. Now, there's a lot of image there. Now, I know this group is filled with a lot of foodies. Right? Am I right? Yeah, I'm right. I know. Because I know some of you. Okay. And the imagery of this thing is like if we decide we're all going to go out to like one of the best restaurants, okay, and you know, so we get dressed up and we kind of gear ourselves around the day and stuff like that, and we eat less because we know we're going there, you know, and we sit down and you just kind of expect stuff, and as it's brought out and set in front of us, and we just kind of, oh yeah, this is good. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And that first taste. You don't know. No, it's not like eating mac and cheese. You know, it's this idea of taking something and savoring and going, oh, that is so good. That's the idea. Delight yourself, savor. But it's more than that. It's also, this word also, at the time it's being used, had the idea of luxuriating. Same word, okay? And when you think of luxury, I mean, all sorts of things come to your mind. I think, for one thing, I just think of laying out on the beach in the sun and just going, oh, just lay it on me. Or, you know, settling into a hot bath or having a massage. And you just kind of, oh, yeah. This is so good. You get the idea? Again, there's imagery to this thing. That's the word. Delight yourself, Lord, savor this and luxuriate in it. Taking great pleasure in this. This word, it's not just an ancient word, it's a word that's actually used right now in Israel. I mean, if you visit Israel and use modern Hebrew, you know how words all kind of carry and build meaning as they go along, and they come down like, we have a lot of English words like that. You check out the history of it, you go way back, and originally it meant this, and kind of got formed and formed and formed, now we use it this way. If you were to go to Israel today and speak modern Hebrew, this word is used. Now, you probably would never guess what it's used for, the way it's actually the translation of it today in Hebrew. Today, it's used as the main word for party. Yeah, for party. It's collecting all these ideas of savor and luxuriate and taking pleasure, and it means yes, yeah. Okay, remember, Jewish people know how to party. I mean, we know nothing. I mean, when they get together, they know how to party, okay? And that's the word that is used there. Delight yourself in the Lord. That's the idea. You can't come short of simply, you can't simply be committed. You need to be committed, but that's, you can't just stop there. You can't say, well, it's being obedient. That fits in there, but that's not this word. This word shapes those other ones. It shapes how I go about my commitment to Him. It shapes how I go about shaping my life around Him and obedience and stuff like that. It's the delight in Him. One of the pictures that comes to my mind is, obviously, my granddaughter, okay, Eliette. It's not so much her that I'm wanting to call attention to. It's my son and my daughter-in-law. We've done babysitting, a number of times now. Because they have realized, okay, having Grammy and Papa around is a gold mine. So we have this going on. But what's fun to watch, my wife and I will talk about this every time it happens. When they go out, like, to dinner or something like that, and we have Elliot, when they come home, it's like we don't exist. Instead, they walk in, and this little girl is their delight. They come in, and they just light up with her, and pick her up, and she responds to them with that, and it's just fun to watch this thing happen here. That's an image of the picture of this word. Delight in Him. Delight yourself in the Lord. Now, I think it's also good for a moment here to look at the second, not the second line yet, but just the latter part of that first line. Delight yourself in the Lord. I think this is very intentional that David is using this kind of terminology, because it's the idea of delight yourself in Him rather than in anything else. Instead of trying to find your delight, your ultimate fulfillment in something else, David says, I've been down those roads. Let me tell you, those are dead ends, he's saying. Instead, find your greatest pleasure in Him. Allow Him to become the one that fascinates you, that lights you up at the very thought of Him. The idea of intentionally redirecting your ultimate fulfillment to be there. Another way to say this would possibly be this idea of explore the pleasure of knowing Him. The pleasure of knowing Him. I mentioned the imagery of food. We can land on that one, because I know that one resonates with a lot of us here. But the kind of that imagery works best if we kind of play with the way I did there, that we all realize, okay, a big feast is coming, or a special food, dinner at some restaurant is coming up, and we kind of anticipate that. So if that's true, if we know this is coming, if this is what our savoring is going to be about here, it would make no sense for us to eat a whole bunch of junk food before we go out, right? In fact, if we did that, if we kind of went around, we ate a whole bunch of chips and Cheetos and whatever it is you eat, and Cokes and stuff like that, and then we went out, it does something that kind of whacks the whole idea, doesn't it? Because it destroys our appetite for what this wonderful food would be. Now, I've thought about this a lot, because I think what we end up doing, I know this is one of the reasons, why we don't delight in God is because we settle for junk food. For something else to somehow try and fill up the longings inside us, the desires that somehow crave inside us, and we allow other things to somehow come into that, and they fall in the category of sin. And because of that, they destroy our appetite for God. God longs for him to be the one that satisfies all that. So if you look at this now, you come to the second part of this. Now for some of you, this is going to be very disappointing. Because what this statement is saying, what David is putting before us, is that if God becomes our ultimate delight, if that's where it all goes, if he becomes the one that lights us up, the thing that we long for most, then there is a natural consequence that comes with that, or a natural end game to this thing. And that is the second line. And he will give you the desires of your heart. Now, as I've spent time over this past year talking with a bunch of others about this and getting in conversation with them, and I've asked them, what do you think it means by that, like second line there? Often the comments that come back is, well, if I delight myself in the Lord, then he will change the desires of my heart. Doesn't say that, does it? Doesn't say, delight yourself in the Lord and he will correct your wrong desires. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you what you really need. Not what you want, but what you really need. Doesn't say that. And this thing is very clear and blunt here. It just says, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Now, if you probe into this, there are certain desires that we all have. Certain ones that are common with every single one of us in this room. Desires that somehow we walk through life trying to somehow fulfill in some other way. And it takes us back to David's opening statement. Or it takes us farther into the psalm where he explains these in more detail. The idea that somehow I'm thinking that if I could just get this, whatever this is, that's what I really long for. Or if I could just get more of what I already have, that would be what I really long for. But somehow there's these needs or cravings inside of me and they're for these things. And God says through David, no, they aren't. The longings inside of you are ultimately for me. And nothing else will satisfy those. And David, at the end of his life here, says, I've been down those roads. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart, because ultimately all those desires are for him. So the natural, it's not going to change it. Those desires are there. And he says, what happens is when you unload all this other junk off the top of this thing here, what you're going to find is that that's what you long for. And by desiring me, I'm going to give you all of me. I will satiate you with me. I will flood you with who I am. And you will get the desires of your heart. That word desire here is an interesting Hebrew word again. Again, this has been crafted so well by David. Because the word desires here has to do with the idea of the asking of the heart. Or the cry of the heart. Delight yourself in him. And he will give you what your heart cries out for. The thing inside you that somehow pursues you all through life as you try and find something to satisfy it. Delight yourself in him, and he will give you the very crying of the heart, the asking, the longing of the heart. That will be his. So, this has changed me a lot. Because I've been asking myself, what do I even mean when I say that I love the Lord? And it's been a bit of a foggy answer. But it's been clarified this past year as I've really pursued this. That I want my life to be one that is marked by delighting in him. That the very thought of him lights me up. That I savor. That I luxuriate in him. That I explore the pleasure of knowing him. So that when my life is over, the statement that will be made of me is that he was one who delighted in God, who enjoyed him thoroughly, and found the very longings of his heart met. What is the chief end of man? You and me. Chief end, our chief end, is to glorify God by enjoying Him forever. Let's pray.